that cheerful note, please read the first item, Carla.
Item 109, adopt the allocation methodology for the local transportation infrastructure charge, establish a maximum fee, amend charge required code, and direct staff to develop additional components of neighborhood streets program.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Since we last met on this topic in early December, staff have been meeting with you and other, you being the council, and making updates to the original amendments, the original exhibits, excuse me. Therefore, I'd like to withdraw the amendment from December 6th and offer the substitute Exhibit A and the substitute Exhibit C in front of you.
Any objection?
Okay.
Not seeing any objection. The substitute is accepted.
Thank you.
And have we had that prior to today?
Have we had the what?
The substitute. Has that been circulated prior to just now?
Yes, it has. Additionally, I'd like to add to the record a letter of intent dated January 24th, 2018, and that's also before you. And staff will now review these updates and additions. So please introduce yourselves and take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, Mayor Wheeler, and the rest of City Council. My name is Ann Hill, and I work for the Portland Bureau of Transportation as a program manager in the Development, Permitting, and Transit section. I'm here with my colleague, Kurt Kruger. Can you introduce yourself?
Kurt Kruger, Transportation Division Manager for Development Services.
He's going to be in charge of the slideshow and also appear to answer any of your questions. Today, I will briefly review highlights from the December hearing presentation, including providing some background, reviewing the LTIC maximum, the allocation methodology, and the additional code updates that we have made since then. I will then close the presentation and open it up for questions. So really quick, we did go over this in December, but how big is this problem? Again, it has been decades in the making resulting from annexation. While Portland has had these 250 miles of unimproved residential side streets for decades, the cost of the city's backlog of transportation projects is far greater than the city's available transportation funding. This requires the city to prioritize our transportation investments, and the city has done so with grants and opportunities that prioritize projects that carry more people, shift modes, and achieve the goals of Vision Zero. The LTIC was developed to specifically address one aspect of the city's problem with unimproved residential streets. The fact that infill development was occurring throughout the city and in many situations was not contributing anything to solve the city's infrastructure problem, other than signing waivers of remonstrance. The LTIC guaranteed that all new development would contribute to solving the problem through paying a fee, unless frontage improvements were made on site. The LTIC is not an in-lieu fee, it's not a tax, and it is not an SDC. Instead, the LTIC is a transaction fee. So just as a refresher, applied to single dwelling zones on local service streets, the charge is $600 per linear foot based on the total linear frontage of the property adjacent to the local service traffic street. As of July 2017, $1.8 million had been collected. This map before you shows the collections by Neighborhood Coalition. The estimated cost to improve all 250 miles of unimproved local residential streets citywide is $1.5 billion. That calculates to $6.3 million a mile. Thus, the LTIC revenue by itself will only be sufficient to address a very small fraction of the city's unimproved local service streets. When the city adopted the LTIC, the City Council directed that all LTIC revenue would not be spent until Council approved an allocation methodology, specifically how decisions will be made in the future on expending the LTIC. So today, what we are asking support for is the LTIC maximum, and then several updates we'll go through with you that are code amendments. So the low-income owner-occupied exemption, the appeals process and finance option, the LTIC allocation methodology, and the ACODE amendments. As we discussed in December, PBOT found that LTIC to pose a financial impediment to residential development for a small subset of properties with abnormally large frontages on unimproved streets, especially corner lots. The LTIC maximum establishes zone specific per lot maximum numbers to the LTIC. While it is anticipated that revenue could be impacted by 25%, because many projects are on hold as a result of this fee, we anticipate some of those projects being implemented, thereby neutralizing the impact of the maximum. Staff has spent the past 2 months addressing several equity concerns of the LTIC charge through changes in code. And I believe in your exhibits, the highlighted sections are the ones that we added since December. The first code and rule update is an owner-occupied low-income exemption to complement the affordable housing exemption under consideration. In this case, a low-income applicant intending to live in the house or on the property may request an exemption for development of a property on which their primary residence is located if the applicant has a gross income of less than 50% of the area median income as established by HUD. This process and its requirements are consistent with the Bureau of Development Services administrative rules for low-income fee waivers for land use review applications. The second code and rule update is to allow LTIC exemptions to be appealed to the PBOT Administrative Review Committee. Notice will be provided pursuant to City Code Chapter 3.130.
What is the PBOT Administrative Review Committee?
Commissioner Fritz, when we did the co-location reforms in 2009, we created two appeal processes that I think you're familiar with. The appeal panel, which includes members of the public, and then the appeal board, which was the chief engineers. We, after about 2 years of working with those two groups, decided that there needed to be an administrative level review that is composed of section managers from transportation, water, and BES. And so we vet most appeals today through that group, and only a small segment worked their way up through that. So we proposed that administrative review group to be the review in this exemption process.
And that's within transportation. Yes. And is it staff only, or are the citizens on it?
It's staff only.
Finally, the code will allow staff to promulgate rules to establish a financing mechanism for LTIC applicants to consider. So now we've covered the LTIC maximum, which we talked about in December, and the code and rule updates that we've made since the hearing. Now we're going to turn to the neighborhood streets framework, specifically the blue section on your screen, the LTIC financed improvements. But quickly, moving clockwise from the blue section, the remaining three elements of this chart, the maintenance of 50 miles of dirt and gravel streets, pedestrian improvements for underimproved residential collectors, and residential local improvement district, or LID, enhancements, will not be funded using LTIC funds. Instead, PBOT is committed to working toward identifying different revenue sources for these elements in the future.
And what was the rationale for not allowing LTIC to be used for the neighborhood collector pedestrian improvements?
We can use the LTIC funds for the neighborhood collectors. It's just there's so many neighborhood collectors that we also feel that we need to continue to work on specifically addressing those. So they absolutely are allowed to be, we can use LTIC funds. There's just not enough funds to address that issue, and we wanted to keep that issue at a forefront.
Thank you.
So moving on to the LTIC allocation strategy, as reviewed in December, the team used the outreach process to answer a series of questions before you related to finance and budgeting of the funds, what types of streets these residents wanted to live on, so sidewalks, pedestrian improvements, stormwater, and how to select the projects. This feedback was used to develop a set of clear and equitable principles to guide future decisions on funding allocations, street standards, along with the allocation methodology for project selection. I did want to remind you of the Bureau of Environmental Services' partnership with PBOT on LTIC-funded projects because of the recognition of stormwater volume that originates from streets. The portion of capital costs for local street improvements related to stormwater management, and the limited availability of LTIC funding. Any BES funding contributions would be directed towards stormwater system benefits. This partnership will include a financing structure to accelerate project timing and provide long-term program certainty by combining resources citywide rather than geographically segregating pots of money. So the city may be able to improve 1.5 to 3 miles of streets every 10 years, leveraging the LTIC funds. The second area of program development related to the types of streets the city would complete. Since council has adopted alternate transportation and stormwater standards to be used on select streets, and community feedback supported a desired flexibility when addressing safety, mobility, and feasibility, LTIC-funded projects will use a standard strategy adopted from the Tryon-Stevens Neighborhood Plan to match the best option to the street segment being reviewed. After all, not every street needs 2 sidewalks and a traditional street standard. However, stormwater, pedestrian improvements, and traffic calming elements are the priority. With the financing model and street standards matrix in place, the third leg is the design of the allocation methodology for project selection. Again, this methodology is intended to be repeatable, anticipating recurring rounds every 10 years of capital investment. So the slide before you shows the allocation methodology does stay consistent with the city's equity goals, ADA requirements, and adopted neighborhood transportation and stormwater plans. It responds to public input, seeks to leverage other available funding sources, and uses the best available data and methods for identifying high-priority transportation and stormwater improvements. The LTIC allocation methodology establishes 3 fundamental criteria to determine a short list of the highest priority unimproved local residential streets projects to be funded with LTIC. The first criteria is equity, to prioritize improvements that are in areas with high concentrations of underserved populations to ensure that everyone has access to opportunities necessary to satisfy their essential needs, advance their well-being, and achieve their full potential. This was reinforced by results of the online community survey and was especially true for Portlanders who responded to the survey in languages other than English. The second criteria is effectiveness, to prioritize projects that support connectivity and fill critical gaps in the city's transportation and stormwater infrastructure. Effectiveness for transportation emphasizes roadways that can serve as safe, ADA-accessible, multimodal connections to neighborhood parks, schools, transit, and nearby amenities. Residents on unimproved streets that participated in focus groups placed a high priority on projects that will make the most positive impact on the transportation and stormwater systems. The final criteria is efficiency. So to prioritize projects that are consistent with adopted plans, informed by the results of robust community involvement efforts, cognizant of other related CIP improvements occurring in the city, and that make efficient use of limited city resources by leveraging other funds. So the allocation methodology establishes these 3 long-term guiding principles for project selection, driving database decisions and city need. But what does the allocation methodology look like for the 2018-2028 funding cycle? Beginning with equity, we will use 3 of the factors from the Transportation System Plan, or TSP process, the percentage of low-income households, the percentage of communities of color, and the percentage of renters. The areas were scored with 3 factors, being the darkest gray if you had 3 and 0 for the factors if you had 0 factors. To better identify where these communities are, we used block level versus census tract data because it's more granular. Addressing effectiveness, the connectivity factors we considered include safe routes to schools, bike routes, pedestrian routes, and proximity to transit. So these streets were scored, and projects must score a 4 or a 5 to be considered. It should be noted that the metrics for determining stormwater priorities are yet to be determined, awaiting refinement of the new spatial data sets for stormwater infrastructure on residential side streets. And finally, efficiency. So after we looked at the first and the second criteria, we still have too many streets. There's far too many streets than there is funding. So the third thing we looked at was efficiency. Together with the neighborhoods, three neighborhood street plans, Cully, Division Midway, and Tryon Stevens, were developed focusing on quiet residential streets. These plans developed strategies for improving local traffic streets in single-family neighborhoods. These three neighborhood street plan areas contain multiple miles of unimproved residential side streets that are also high priorities for transportation connectivity and with high concentrations of underserved populations. Finally, before you in your packet is a letter of intent the commissioner referenced in his introduction. In response to Commissioner Fritz's questions during the December hearing regarding the areas in Southwest that would be under consideration for the 2018-2028 allocation for project selection, staff reviewed the findings of the equity analysis and will extend the LTIC target area in Southwest Portland slightly south to include the neighborhood with the highest equity score. And so when you're looking at the map in front of you, it's the bottom darkest blue section. And for the purposes of this map, we did include the blue are the LTIC eligible streets. Those are the streets where currently the funds are being collected. And you can also see the orange streets, which are the neighborhood collectors. So those would also be streets that would be considered when we were looking at how we would allocate the money. As a quick reminder, for 2018 to 2028 round of LTIC project selection, PBOT and BES staff will first identify appropriate LTIC-funded projects in Southwest Portland within the expanded boundary by including the consideration of eligible neighborhood collectors without curbs, the use of alternate street standards, and coordinating with other city capital projects. Once staff apply the same process within the Cully and Midway division boundaries, those proposals will be reviewed with the respective neighborhood coalitions and associations to solicit feedback before coming to council with the financing package. In closing, we ask for your consideration and approval of this LTIC maximum, associated code amendments, and the allocation methodology for the purpose of expending LTIC revenues. Additionally, we ask for your consideration and direction to further develop the Neighborhood Streets Program, specifically the development of a maintenance program for ongoing grade and gravel of gravel streets, a proposal and development of the 2018-19 budget, and support for the letter of intent to expand the Tryon Stevens project area for consideration of the allocation. This concludes this afternoon's presentation. PBOT staff Christine Leon, Kurt, myself, Jody Yates are here, along with BES staff Ivy Dunlap and Tiberius Solutions principal Nick Papanuk are here and available for questions.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
So could you please go back to the map of the whole city with the equity scoring?
Sure.
So after that one.
I think you have to go before it. Yeah.
No, it's like 2-3 from the end of the presentation.
Do you want the one of Tryon Stevens?
The one before that, please. So that's one, but one before that. Okay, so I appreciate that you've added the most vulnerable area in Southwest Portland. Mm-hmm. The map also clearly shows that there are three most that the number three most vulnerable neighborhoods in North Portland are left off, and several of them in mid-East Portland and outer East Portland. So that remains a concern. If you could go to the next slide of the Tryon-Stevens plan. So there we're seeing that that's we've added the area with the factor three, but we've still left on areas with zero vulnerability factors. And so I would suggest that we need, if we're really going to start with looking at equity, mm-hmm. start with looking at equity and mm-hmm. start with the purple area and the blue one, but then also potentially look at other areas of the city where they mm-hmm. start with looking at the most vulnerable streets rather than necessarily where we've done a planning project. So there's that piece. We did get another letter from the Ombudsman and the Office of Equity and Human Rights addressing continuing concerns. Would you like to outline those concerns and what your response is? Or would you like me to? So there's still a concern about the very low income definition and how it's scored. For the exemption for individuals who are considered very low income.
Mm-hmm. The Office... So- I'm sorry, Commissioner Fritz, as stated, we as staff looked at, just for continuity, what the Bureau of Development Services is doing with relation to the administrative rules for low-income fee waivers for landers who review applications. That's how we arrived at the 50% of the area medium income as established by HUD.
So you just disagree with the letter from OEHR?
That's just our explanation for why we settled on 50%. If there's a desire for us to go higher, we absolutely will do so. Just at that point, is it 60? Is it 80?
Want to be encouraging low-income folks or lower-income folks to be able to become homeowners mm-hmm. and residents of properties they own. So I think there's still some work to do there. I'm also wondering about the provision of loans and where would the money come from for those loans for people who qualify?
For the financing?
Yes.
So the financing would be similar to what happens with LIDs currently. So it would be placed on the title.
Okay.
We just didn't have time before the hearing today to actually come up with a complete financing model. And so we are committed to putting that in place. We just need the time to work with the auditor and staff to figure out which makes the most sense. So BES has some models we could look at, but they're for much less money, like $3,000.
Yeah.
So we just need to, some of them we can't use because they're state regulations. So we just need to do a little more homework on what would make the most sense.
Yeah. And then there are three factors in the Office of Equity and Human Rights and Ombudsman's letter. Mm-hmm. They do call out about the appeals should go to the hearings officer rather than this internal PBOC committee. Mm-hmm. What's your response to that?
The appeal is really a review of an exemption, and it's really to make sure that somebody filled out an exemption form appropriately and then to verify that the numbers, it's a relatively simple exercise. This is an appeal of whether or not you agree with the charge being assessed to the property. It's did you complete the form and do you have the documentation to support the exemption being requested? I don't think that warrants a hearings officer review.
Well, it still seems like it's the people who have made the decision are then going to rule on the appeal. So if there's a way to have at least some citizens involved in one of these committees, I think that would be helpful. But then that leads to the third point, which you're saying it's just like a technical, did you fill out the form correctly? They are suggesting that we need a process for other individual circumstances or other hardships for PBOT to be able to make determinations, which then would have presumably some criteria which a hearings officer could evaluate as well.
So our intent was wanted to make sure council was supportive of the proposal before you today. And after that, we were going to start working on administrative rules and that exemption documentation to be filled out, we intend to include a hardship provision in that exemption process, similar to what BDS uses for hardship exemptions, and model it that way. So that's our next step, provided council supports the action today.
And would that come back to council for our approval?
It wasn't intended to. It was intended to be adopted as an administrative rule. We can certainly route the proposal to council office before we adopt that rule.
Well, I'm sure we'll get some testimony. Yeah. There was just one other thing that I noticed. This was in the original code in section, so this is 1788090, section C. We say payment of a local transportation infrastructure charge will exempt the subject property to the application from future local transportation infrastructure charges. Is a local improvement district defined as a local transportation infrastructure charge?
It is not. The intent of that was if we charge an applicant today and they were to raise a structure 20 years from now, that we don't come back and charge them the same LTIC again in the future.
So how did we deal with the issue that they're paying into this fund now and then maybe they've got a waiver of remonstrance on an LID and they might have to pay again to actually have the street fully improved?
I don't think we formally put a proposal in front of council. I think we're going to wrestle with that when we bring an LID that might also include properties that have paid the LTIC. I don't want to solve that problem right here, but one solution would be to credit those properties for what has been paid, but accounting for the fact that interest and cost of doing construction increases over time. If we collected money today and 10 years from now, that project expense goes up by 15%. Do we want to have the ability to capture the delta between what was collected today and that project cost? That's a conversation that we can have today, but I think could be had during an LID formation hearing.
Well, I remember it was either in December or in the previous December when we had that concern raised. So I am concerned that we don't seem to have solved that problem.
I think if I can capture, I think, your intent from when we adopted this a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, then the direction to us was to continue to collect the waivers of remonstrance to give us the future ability to form LIDs, even if we're still collecting funds today.
Okay, so I'm going to look into that, because there'll be questions, I'm sure, after we've had public testimony, so those are mine for right now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. Hi, Carla. Public testimony, please.
Yes, we have three people signed up. Please come on up. Are Robert Evanson, Marianne Fitzgerald, and John Cohen.
3 minutes, please. State your name for the record. When the light comes on, your 3 minutes is up.
My name is Robert Evanson. I'd like to read a short narrative into the record. I'm calling this Fair Share or Unfair Share. Southwest Fairmont Boulevard is a well-known residential street used by hikers, bikers, runners, walkers, and homeowners. Fairmont Boulevard is largely fully developed in that there are very few undeveloped lots left to build on, much like Southwest Portland streets that are fully developed and functioning without curbs and sidewalks. My wife and I bought our lot on Fairmont Boulevard about 40 years in order to build our future retirement home on. During that 40 years, we gladly paid our fair share of real estate taxes on that lot to pay for city services. That time has come, and we are planning to build a modest 2,600-square-foot home on Fairmont Boulevard, hopefully next year. Based on a street frontage width of 84 feet, the proposed PBOT infrastructure charge of $600 per foot will come to over $50,000 for our lot. This transportation charge is in addition to all of the other systems development charges that are required to build a new home in Portland. Since Fairmont Boulevard is one of those many streets that are fully developed without curbs and sidewalks, all of the other existing homes on Fairmont Boulevard, as well as other fully developed streets, will not have to pay a penny towards this proposed transportation infrastructure charge, although they will continue to use the streets. In addition, this $50,000 charge to us will go to pay for street improvements in another part of the city, not improvements on Fairmont Boulevard. I have here a copy of my current real estate property statement, which shows that everyone's real estate taxes go to fund 19 separate city and county entities. In addition, we all pay separate monthly water and sewer charges to the city. Conclusion. PBOT and the City of Portland need to fund street improvements as part of every citizen's real property taxes in a manner that is fair and equitable to all users. This charge can be viewed as a legal taking on a few. No one should pay our fair share of street. We should all pay our fair share of street maintenance. No one should pay an unfair share.
Thank you, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler. I'm Marianne Fitzgerald, and I submitted written testimony on Monday the 29th, so I am assuming that you've already had that. I'm going to stick to that for my comments today. The first thing I want to say is to please direct staff to remove the stakeholder working group roster from the rules. The stakeholder working group had no input into the rules. The public had no input into the rules. And I am offended that my name is on there looking like I was part of this proposal when I disagreed with this proposal for a very long time. The second thing is to oppose the LTIC fee. It's already artificially too low. I oppose the maximum. I don't think that there should be a lid. The $600 per linear foot was based on LIDs, mostly from the east side, and according to staff documents, did not include any stormwater improvements. And I have talked with many people who are now looking at LIDs, and the cost in Southwest Portland is closer to $15,000 per linear foot, not $600 a linear foot. So this gentleman has the choice of improving his street. He could pay for the street improvements. There's a development going in near me that will be paying for half street improvements on an LTIC eligible street. You know, they can pay it. But by making it artificially low, you have less money and just said 25% less revenue in the fund. And, you know, I'm sorry I get so upset about building 1.5 to 3 miles of street improvements every 10 years. That's nothing. When the city has offered like 15,000 waivers of remonstrance, I have a folder here of pictures of all of the improvements in the last 2 years, where most of the staff sitting behind me were staffing these reviews, and no infrastructure, no stormwater. And now the Bureau of Environmental Services is using our ratepayer and our taxpayer dollars to deal with the stormwater issues in Basin 3 off of Capitol Highway. So you're kicking the can from the builder or the developer of the property to the homeowners who can't afford the improvements in the future. And while this document before you did not say anything about local improvement districts, the City of Portland's budget request that just came out this week says that LID projects often rely on public subsidies to make the project affordable for the benefiting property owners. However, there is no funding available to subsidize new LIDs. Without a new public funding source, the LID program for local streets will likely be very limited to commercial or developer-requested LIDs. So that gives me little hope that LIDs are going to solve this humongous problem that's been going on for years and continues. In the documents before you, the BES says that they would only participate if there was citywide benefit. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't show me a lot of commitment. And I'm out of time, but I have more I'd like to say.
We don't have a ton of people signed up. Why don't you take 30 more seconds and wrap up your thoughts?
Okay. Regarding public participation, some of what Ann showed today about the new Southwest Portland boundaries is news to me. She came to Southwest Neighborhoods in October, said, "What do you think?" We hadn't seen the details, and now every time I've talked to her since then, she's surprised that we don't love this program. So there is no public notice about the Appeals Bureau or the administrative review. There is no public participation in which streets get selected. And as far as we are on Capitol Highway project, which needs every penny that it could get to make it whole, we should be spending these scarce LTIC funds to leverage the Capitol Highway project rather than some obscure street on their little map. Because half the money was raised in Southwest, I'm glad that we will see some in this first allocation, but there's no guarantee because all of the stuff is done behind closed doors without any public participation through public notice. And finally, the fiscal impact statement only talks about the fiscal impact to the developers or the property owners, not to the people living in the neighborhood who are stuck with these potholed, stormwatery, flooded streets that they are expected to fix.
Very good. Thank you. Other than that, you love it, though. Thank you.
And I'm
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I'm seeing in your written testimony that you also are concerned about the LID issue and that I'm right that in 2016 we were going to look into how do local improvement districts fit in with this.
There is language in here that says we looked at it, but I don't know what they did. I mean, you know, you can ask staff what they did to look into LIDs. It doesn't sound like much, but they are expensive.
And so I thought when we discussed this in 2016 that there was going to be community input into out of all the choices. I mean, even with the money that would be raised under the maximum, there's not nearly enough to do all of the streets in even the most in, needy areas.
That's right.
What's your understanding of how or whether the community will be involved in making these choices as the money starts to be allocated?
Well, so far, the amount of dialogue has been through the Sweeney Transportation Committee, and that would be nice if we would know ahead of time that this was going to be discussed, and we could, you know, through our neighborhood channels, get the word out. When Ann came in October, we had three other things on the agenda and didn't really have a lot of time to talk about it. So it wasn't really as meaningful as it should have been.
But moving forward, if there is a certain amount of money, I know that we were doing. Is the Southwest in Motion plan still moving forward?
4:30 this afternoon is our fourth meeting. Yes,
and that's designed to try to prioritize some of the communities.
Yes,
because like the East Portland in
yes, Michigan. And there's an online survey right now as we speak.
Okay, so that's potentially a way for community involvement in directing the use of these
yes.
funds?
Yes, and actually, there's no one here officially representing Sweeney, but there was a motion that was approved by the Sweeney Board last week that specifically requests that the LTIC funds be prioritized using the SWIM criteria, but the SWIM criteria has not been developed yet.
Okay, and I see another of your points is that this money should stay in the area in which it was raised. Can you see any deviation from that? You know, we saw on the map that East Portland has a lot of need, but not much money.
Right. Southeast Uplift, Woodstock, whatever neighborhoods, Brentwood, Darlington, where they've raised fees, they're, you know, I feel bad that they're not going to see any improvements for at least 10 years. So the areas that are experiencing the infill without infrastructure are not necessarily the ones that see the improvements. And actually, if you look at the City of Portland street surface data, the street surfaces in Southwest Portland are far worse than the street surfaces in East Portland. The difference is people are getting killed in East Portland as recently as yesterday, and that's intolerable. So,
thank you for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is John Cohen, and I am a real estate broker. And I came across this issue recently on doing some research on behalf of one of my clients who wishes to split off a quarter-acre parcel of their property in order to possibly sell it off. It's an estate situation. It's a triangular piece of property that borders one unimproved street and one underimproved street in Southwest Portland. And to give you an example, 264 feet and 134 feet of frontage, and the charge under the existing fee system would be $236,000, which by most estimates is perhaps what the property is worth. But even at capped at $60,000, that charge is going to be a third or to a quarter of the value of the property that would be borne by the property owner, an estate that has no cash. And in order to divide it off, they would have to pay the fee in order to get it finalized. My concern is there a mechanism to assess the fee at the development stage down the road? The sale of the property could build that in, build in that cost so the developer pays a little less but then has the money to pay the charge, whether it's upon approval of building permits or sale of the property once it's completed. But to put that burden on the homeowner, like the gentleman said earlier, is onerous, especially in that situation. So a lot of my comments also mirror what he was saying earlier about, basically 20% of the property owners on unimproved streets are paying for 100% of the improvements in the city, where years and years ago, the city paid as it went along. And there's that unfairness that applies that's just too difficult for a lot of people to understand when they're facing these huge numbers to pay for the whole system. And I think that's and the piece that there's no assurance that this property in the southwest, the outer southwest hills, would ever see any improvement, even though $60,000 or $230,000 goes into the fund. And that's just not equitable at all. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you.
And I apologize if a lot of these have been taken up and I came into this very late in the game. So
Thank you. Good testimony, both of you. Appreciate it. Does that complete our testimony?
That's all who signed up.
Could we have staff come back up and maybe respond to a couple of things? There were a few just very specific questions that were raised Sure. That were interesting to me. First of all, the stakeholder working group has been included in the rules, and you heard one person testify Right. that they'd prefer that be left out. Why does that need to be included, or does it?
So when the rules for the LTIC were established in 2015 or 2016, the rules had that list in the front of it. And so actually what we did, if you look at Exhibit C, we did establish, because that was a concern I raised, was that it was going to, how would you know when the amendments were made in subsequent years? So there is a history section on the front that says adopted on May 20th, 2016, and then what we've done now is this is the, we'll add to that history that they were then amended. We can certainly remove that cover page, but these were the rules that were adopted by the assistant director in May 2016 with that list in the front. And that list actually does say May 2016 at the top of that, of the list. So we can certainly remove the names.
Is that normal for your administrative rules to have the committee's names in it?
No. It just that's what had been adopted. I think it was probably done with the project. It was before. Yeah, so
yeah.
That was how we, instead of removing it altogether, that was our remedy, was to establish the history on the front.
And this is an administrative rule, so the council doesn't have to put anything into the ordinance. You can just take it
right
out.
And in fact, we brought this to you. I mean, we could have just posted this on the auditor, but because we were adding some of this language to the rules and not just the code, we wanted you to see everything that we were adding, which is why it's here as an exhibit.
I personally don't feel strongly that it be included. I don't know how other people feel, but I guess it's an administrative decision. Yeah.
I just, it's unusual. I have never seen them in
right.
any other one, so I'd prefer to take it out.
We'd be happy to. I mean, we can absolutely. We can also make it like an appendix or something in the back, too, if Fine. There's a need to keep the names.
That seems reasonable. Absolutely. And then the second question was just the question raised about the lid on the LTIP.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain the logic of that for all of us?
Oh, the LTIP maximum?
Yes, please.
So when we looked at the LTIP maximum, there's been discussion, if you cap the LTIC maximum, let's say at $30,000, then someone at an R5 versus an R20, the R20 is going to see $100,000 savings, and somebody at an R5 would potentially see maybe a $50,000 savings. So in sort of the interest of working to be equitable in terms of the size of frontages, and that what we were seeing in our analysis, that it was really based on if one had a property that either was a corner lot or some sort of angled lot, what if we looked at that the frontage of the zone? So that's how we calculated the maximum.
Very good. Any further questions, colleagues? Sorry, Commissioner Fritz.
So I'm continuing to be concerned about the low-income exemption and looking at page 14 of the administrative rules. 50% of the area medium income seems really quite low as an expectation that people are going to be able to buy and own or occupy a property and pay this amount of money. So is there a process for changing that?
Sure. I mean, if the council would like to offer an amendment, we'd be happy to change that amount. The way we came to that amount, again, we explained how we came to that. But again, if council would like for us to change that, we'd be happy to do so.
I had also raised a concern that it was too low, and I understand you based it on some BDS code, and unfortunately I didn't get the information that I had asked for, which was how many people are applying, how many, if any, are applying for this, because it's so unlikely that someone that low income would be developing property or looking into land use. So I mean,
and
I
we've
would
had not
increasing it, but I just don't know that it's very meaningful at.
Well, and actually the Ombudsman and Office of Acting Human Rights say that this is actually 50% is very low income.
Yeah.
That HUD says it's 80% is low income. So I would move that we change it to 80%.
We have a motion and a second. Can I call that Fritz Exhibit A?
Call it whatever you like, Matt.
Very good. Further discussion, questions? Commissioner Fritz?
The hardship exemption. So tell me again how you're going to deal with figuring out what the criteria are.
Just a quick trip down memory lane on the administrative rule. We tried to anticipate hardships when we first set the program up in 2016, so we carefully crafted language that anticipated a fire damage situation. A fire occurred, somebody needed to spend some time dealing with an insurance company to get funds secured to replace that structure. So we created a two-year exemption program that if your home was damaged due to fire and you were replacing it, we wouldn't come in and charge this program. We're trying to expand that to a hardship, those cases that we don't know what might come at us, but set a system in place where somebody can make a hardship case come before the committee and have that evaluated. We frankly have had one situation that I can think of in a year and a half, and it's one that was in the Willamette Week, unique situation, but the hundreds of permits that we processed in the last year and a half, we've had one that fit into that category.
Yeah, for the most part, people are building really fancy new homes that may not qualify, but the one in Willamette was a manufactured home. As we look at more tiny homes and more minimalist ways of developing, it would seem like we should have something that if the value of the improvement is less than X or less than X percent of the LTIC, that should be thinking about. So I guess I'd like that process to come back to council, because at that point then we could decide actually it shouldn't be long as an administrative decision for the appeal. It should go to the hearings officer.
So for instance, the gentleman who gave the testimony about his clients who want to subdivide their property and it currently would cost them as much or more than the value of the property, would that be a potential hardship exemption?
That would not.
Okay.
I don't want to spend too much time here today. What we don't want to do is create an exemption or an appeal process that gets us back into the same situation that got us here in the first place. As Ms. Fitzgerald pointed out, we have thousands of waivers on file where we've created exemptions and not required improvements. And so this effort was really to correct that practice and start collecting funds. I appreciate the gentleman's concern. I'm going to talk with him after the hearing. I think there's a couple creative ways that we can do as he was asking and moving that collection to a building permit scenario. Mm-hmm. That's a unique one. Most of the time when we're working with applicants that are dividing a property, we're working with a developer. And it's a little unique that we're dealing with an estate situation. Happy to take a look at that.
Okay.
Very good. So, Commissioner Fritz.
Well, so then my outstanding concerns are the issue of allocation to the beyond those two, the three areas that have street plans, to focus at least some of the resources on the area scoring three under the equity analysis within each of the areas where it's being collected.
The issue we have is there's too many streets, and that's why when we did the equity screen as the first step and then we looked at the streets as the second step, because we had too many for the amount of money, that's why we then looked to those neighborhood street plans that had neighborhood commitment. Because what's difficult is if you just look at those areas and you still have too much, you've still too many streets for the amount of money. How do you choose?
Well, yes, I agree. I understand that. I guess I'm disagreeing that I think we should go back to the equity scores and include the neighborhoods, and that there should potentially be some benefit to the area, even the coalition area, Southeast Suffolk, mm-hmm. is a very big area for them to get. None of the money doesn't seem mm-hmm. fair or reasonable, particularly when there are neighborhoods like Brentwood Darlington that are not particularly affluent, in fact, mm-hmm. On the lower end. So I would like to see something that involves the community in that allocation. I mean, mm-hmm. even within what you've defined, we don't have enough money. Mm-hmm. So there should be, I think, opportunities, like we just had this great example of the LID over on 82nd near...
Mill. 80th and Mill.
80th yeah. and Mill, right, yeah. Where near the school, where lots of different bureaus are putting money in, and so the mm-hmm. whole thing gets to be, you know, bigger than the sum of the parts, which is great. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that we want some opportunity to do that. I'm also interested in East Portland in action and Southwest Portland in action. Essentially, if there's more need than funds available, mm-hmm. giving the community the choice in a robust, equitable public process to decide what is their choice. Mm. I mean, when we did that in Southwest for things like prioritizing sidewalks on neighborhood collectors, mm-hmm. Surprisingly, you know, people think, oh, everybody's just going to advocate for their own area. And just like the process I did for where should we allocate park system development charge money, actually, people do care about giving more mm-hmm. for people who need it more. Right. So I would like us to look at, I'd like you to look at some method of doing that. And then my final concern is the LID issue. And I can just see coming to council with an LID where somebody's already paid it. And, you know, we have no policy guidance at that time to say, well, this person just paid $60,000. And what, you know, they've already paid at the office. They shouldn't have to pay again.
Thinking a couple steps forward, so this effort was trying to get us to focus areas of the city where we think we could bring projects back to city council with some funding. We're going to be back in front of council to actually select projects and get your endorsement of those projects. So we will be back in front of you.
Okay.
I think we can take your concerns as we look at those projects and come back and respond to your concerns.
Yeah, I think I would not want to vote for yes, go ahead and do this project unless that has been decided.
And I think we'd like to commit to you that we also look at the issue of the LIDs, because I think it probably is going to involve some future conversations and look at some different nuances of that before we make that decision. But we can bring back that discussion with the project selection.
So just one point of clarification. The allocation methodology are just the three steps used. Once council says we agree that equity, effectiveness, and some sort of looking at where there's been neighborhood involvement, that those are the three steps, once that's approved, then we have to go figure out the neighborhoods, and we have to go to the neighborhoods, figure out the streets that make sense. If we're going to do a financing package with BES, we have to come back to council for that financing package. So this step is... Does council agree with the three steps of equity, effectiveness, and efficiency? That's the allocation methodology. The selection in 2018 will be the next step that we have to come back to council with, absolutely, because of how we plan to finance the money.
But step three is just based on the three that we happen to have done. So I guess that's the one I have the most concern about.
That's for 2018. The step three is just once you have those first two, like you're suggesting, we were working to be careful that in 10 years from now, we didn't say you absolutely had to use a plan or you absolutely had to go to a coalition, because what if the coalitions were something else in 10 years? So we said, I think what it says in the rules is that that third step is, hold on, I'm working to get to the language. It's on the last page, page 18. It says, the project would be consistent with adopted plans or respect the results of previous community involvement efforts and other related improvements occurring in the city and make efficient use of city resources. So this is on page 18 of Exhibit
C. So it doesn't specify what those adopted plans are.
Right, because this is just the methodology, because in 10 years, those plans might be different.
Right. Well,
plans.
I would encourage you not to just stick with those three particular street plans.
No, that was our proposal for how we spend it in 2018, that we use those three plans for the first round, not that that would be where we would spend the money every time.
Okay. Thank you for clarification.
But what I'm hearing you say is that even in respect to that, you would still like us to relook at even how we're looking at applying this third step,
yeah,
and not just look at those three plans.
Well, go back to within those, if that's how we're doing it this year, look at where are the most needy areas within those
right.
plans and involve the neighborhood
yes.
and the other community groups who might want to be
right.
involved in, you know, we've got this amount of money.
Right. Absolutely. And just for clarification, you know, we've been meeting with the neighborhoods and the coalitions since the spring. We also sent, as I said, in December, 28,000 postcards to every single person who lived on one of these streets, because we really wanted to dig in about the LID question and their appetite to pay and what they thought about that. We additionally did the focus groups. We did a special focus group for neighborhood leaders. And then we went back again to do the community surveys. So we sort of built this based on that feedback we got throughout the process. And we are planning to go back with whatever streets we think about in terms of, because the one thing that we talk about in the city is if we want to leverage these funds, which is a conversation we heard here at council in December, we at least have to do that first work to be able to go out to a neighborhood and say, this is where the CIP projects are planned. You know, this is where there's some SDC money being spent, so that they have that full picture when they then look at where those segments are. So we would start internally to put that map together to then take to the neighborhoods.
I do appreciate there's a lot of work being done, and you certainly spent a lot of time with me going through it. I think there's still some refinements. This is a problem that we've been grappling with for at least the 25 years I've been involved in city issues. I would like to see the hardship criteria, and to consider whether it should be the hearings officer who hears the appeals rather than the administrative. I'd like to see the plan for the LIDs, a proposal for who, you know, do they have to pay again? And then this final piece of including the community in, you know, very soon after you start doing your upper, you know, your analysis, ask the community.
Mm-hmm.
So you want us to come back with something on those topics for the second reading?
I'm sorry?
You want us to come back in response to those for the second reading?
That would seem like a tall order to bring it back next week, but Do we need to amend the ordinance to specify when that would come back?
Well, we could do something like that.
Can we commit to bringing the answers to the questions or responses to the questions when we bring the project selection back, and that will give us time to have some of that community conversation? We're not going to spend the money until we come back to council asking for approval, so that seems like a good time to come back and respond to it.
Okay. Yes, except that I'm really hoping when we get to that point we don't have people coming in saying that they haven't been fully engaged and that they don't support the choices. So that's going to need to inform how you come back to us.
And I'm going to prompt the council before you vote if there was an appetite to consider an emergency ordinance today, only that we had...
I need to look into it. I'm sorry, Kurt.
No worries.
Because, I'm also thinking about these hardship waivers. And so people come in, you know, as Commissioner Day just said, or the testimony we heard. There needs to be